Welcome to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, where I, Monique Chambers, am joined by businesses that have sold their product and services overseas. Welcome to this week's issue of Exporting Malta with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Matthew Pulicino from Stargate Studios. Now, sorry, I did the jazz hands there because you just can't say it without, you know. What does Stargate Studios do?
So, my name is Matthew Pulicino, as you said, and I'm the CEO of Stargate Studios Malta, a company that's been in operation for 6-7 years.
Okay.
In one shape or form, or we've actually been around for longer, but eventually evolved into Stargate Studios.
Okay.
Over these past 7 years as a solid presence in Europe. And Stargate Studios is a visual effects and full production television and film company.
Okay.
Which means we actually do full television and film production.
So proper, like a full-on program or a full-on film?
Yes, depending on the size and scope.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a particular accent on visual effects, okay, which is our main line of export, to be honest.
Okay. So what do you mean by visual effects? Is that this sort of sci-fi type stuff, or is it, you know, making water move across the screen? What's a visual effect that we would recognize?
Visual effects, first of all, is a growing industry, because mm-hmm. even though it was born quite some time ago, nowadays it's in full bloom. As you know, when you go to the cinema and you sit along for the credits,
mm-hmm.
all those names of thousands of artists that roll up are generally in their masses visual effects artists.
Okay.
They come towards the end of the credits, but they are the people, and we are the people responsible for making happen on screen what a cinematographer or a filmmaker or a producer
uh-huh.
cannot film in actual fact in front of camera.
Right, so that might be a storm at sea, that might be cats-type costumes, that might be anything like that?
Anything. It could be as mundane as taking off a security rope from somebody standing on a ledge.
Okay.
So removing a security rope, which you wouldn't want to see in the story,
uh-huh.
but needs to be there for practical reasons, would be a clean-up in visual effects,
mm-hmm.
to sending up a space shuttle into space, or actually, it could be anything in between as well.
So, a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Ah.
There's a lot of mundane work we do, and then there's the fun stuff. And the fun stuff is everything from bullet hits to exploding, whatever. I mean, we employ artists, digital artists,
mm-hmm.
people who sit on their machine and create to a brief. So it is a commercial art by no misinterpretation. It's actually a commercial art. So people are told, the artists are told what to do, and they have a brief, and the director and
okay.
the producers have very clear expectations. But then it's our job to take it, to make it look real, and then also take it to the next level to exceed a client's expectations, because it's the imagination of the artists and of the producers and supervisors to imagine what previously they never managed to film.
So say you had, you know, if someone had to be shot.
Yes.
You've got, you know, the actor on screen, and then you deal with it from there, basically.
So what happens is, I've just come away from a session of a couple of hours, maybe a little more than that. It started yesterday, of breaking down a script.
Okay.
One is presented with a script. And generally speaking, our clients don't exactly know what they want. They know what they need, but they don't know how to get it. So they don't understand our involvement in the process. Filmmakers are very practical people. They're on set and they're dealing with elements, dealing with real things that they can touch and feel and manipulate, but they don't understand the digital world. It's only very recently that digital cinema cameras have become commonplace.
Okay.
Some people actually still film with film. With celluloid.
Okay.
The bigger ones that can afford it, the ones that can go through the lab process and take on all the nuances of actually filming in film, do still choose film.
Mm-hmm.
And digital cameras are very recent. So the amount of digital equipment on set is not that it's not that commonplace. People who work on set are very practical people. They tie ropes, they put up lights, they deal with costumes and all the rest of it. And then we come along with our digital equipment And they very much take a hands-off attitude. It's like, okay, it's your turn to do your job. And generally speaking, that is the supervisor. So once again, you break down a script, try to understand where we can intervene. So it could be anything from adding signage on a building.
Okay.
Or if you're doing a period piece, removing modern elements that couldn't be removed. Or an explosion or gushing water, stuff that obviously is going to be a problem to create. We pretty much know when it's going to be cheaper to be done in visual effects. Another very good example would be digital crowds. So 50, 60, 70 years ago, film studios were famous for hundreds and thousands of extras populating arenas or, you know, Ben-Hur, you know, with thousands of cheering crowds. And you obviously have to feed, dress, and
store
pay
those
and
people.
Everybody.
Yeah.
So nowadays we have digital means to create little miniature computer-generated people. And doing 5 or doing 500 is pretty much the same workflow. So in reading the script, if there's a line that says, "And the crowd stormed the gates," then I know that the production is going to be able to afford its 50 or 100 practical people, and then it's going to want to augment it with another 5,000 behind that.
But this isn't necessarily people standing still. This could be people moving.
Oh, most certainly. They could be fighting, moving, jumping, dying. They could do anything. And therefore, I would extract from a script all the interventions that we would need to make, and I would get back to a client and say, okay, so this is where we see ourselves collaborating on the movie. Have a couple of to and fro's, budget sessions, you know, breakdowns, technical discussions. We get asked to visit the places we're going to film or the film studios.
That's it.
And that's when, as a producer, I hand over to what we call a visual effects supervisor, who's the technical man on the ground. And he's the guy to figure it all out in practice, because we don't just receive the footage after the fact. Mm-hmm. We have to be there whilst the filming is happening.
Because I'm guessing nothing actually always goes according to plan. It must be that things move and change during a film anyway.
Yes, you have to be you have to be aware of what you have to be capable of dealing with the unpredictable. But sometimes we erect what are known as blue screens or green screens, which are big.
And that's where you can like superimpose a forest or something behind someone. Okay.
Once you put up a screen like that, nobody understands what's going on. Okay. So the actors need their cues, they need their director needs his understanding of the perspective. So that's where we come in. And the supervisor would have figured all that out and is working with the team to choreograph what happens once we roll on a green screen, for example. If you have an explosion, generally speaking, on set, when you have an explosion, it's not a real explosion, but it's an air cannon with a flame and dust and fake debris. So you have to yank people back on cables because they won't actually fly away
when they see
with the blast. So actors will be yanked out. People react to the explosion as if they were really in the blast zone. And then we have to design all that to be able to clean it up and make it look real. So
There's also the stuff of them getting covered in things and
definitely if they lose limbs or something, blood splatters. So our interventions then have names, like it's bullet hits, it's amputations, it's explosions, add fire, add smoke, add water. They can be very simple sometimes. They can be change the window panes on a building to make it look period. So anything that needs to be done in post, which is short for post-production, needs to be seen to on set. And that's the presence of a supervisor. Once we finish filming, supervisor comes home, lives with us in the studio, and basically sees the project through the post-production phase, where we then intervene on each and every clip. That needs work. So you may have scenes that are very heavy on visual effects. You may have scenes which don't need us at all. But the ones that do need us would need a brief on each and every shot.
So is a film filmed in order? Because, you know, sometimes you see something, you think, how did they you know, get that story, and he's got those scarrings, and then that goes, is it filmed in order? Is it like, no, do the clean Leo DiCaprio or whatever, now do the scar or the explosion, then you do the one after? Is it filmed in order, or it's...
The guys would really, I would say, first of all, weather has to come on everything. So
really? So you can't visually affect the weather? We can't
you
change
can.
The weather?
Okay. You can, okay. But you generally try to, you always try to get stuff for real.
Okay.
So weather and time of day is what commands the first pass, and then you have actors' availability.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have locations which get wrapped around that. So you generally would try to get all your locations done. So if you have the inside of a castle, you would try and get as much of that stuff done back to back to be able to benefit from the economies of scale of not moving the unit out of the castle, back into the castle, out of the castle. So no, films are not shot in chronological order as the story would tell. Well, but it also depends upon the director, who may want to do that. But generally speaking, it will make it a very expensive process to just follow the story around as the pages dictate.
Yeah. No, so thinking if you have various scenes in one particular place, like say, do you do all the clean first, then you do all the scarred up and that sort of, because it must be costly with makeup, with visual effects.
So visual effects kind of follows that discipline, but it's also interesting if you visit a hair and makeup caravan on set and see an actor getting done up, there would be different pictures stuck on the wall of the character in different phases of the story, and they would have to make him look like what he looked like in that particular scene.
Yeah, so as a continuity.
There are people who are continuity guys, and they take photographs every day.
I'm evil at that. I'm always spotting things. Yeah, I'm really... No, his phone was in the other pocket before.
Exactly. Script supervisors, continuity. These are all tricks of the trade to make it feel like it all happened on the same day or within the same hour or in the same minute. And they could actually be separated apart.
And when you say you go on site so you can see if that high street that you're going to use has, you know, a modern post box or a modern,
of course,
I'm gonna say phone box, that just goes to show how dated. But, you know, so you can literally edit those out, and so then it becomes your responsibility to be able to...
Sometimes it's a cost or a time consideration, like, do we need to take that off, or can you take it off for us in post?
Okay.
And we may take a call on that. Do we need to add flags to the top of every building, or can you add those in post? You know, there's a cost to put them up.
I didn't even think of that stuff. Okay.
There's a lot of stuff.
Okay. So, how do you get into this? And why Malta? And what happens next? Because surely the local industry isn't enough to keep you going.
Yes. So, I mean, life is a journey, and this is where we are right now. I started off together with colleagues, friends, my business partner. I have two business partners in this particular job. One is American and the other is Maltese.
Okay.
So it's Sam Nicholson, who's actually the founder of Stargate Studios in Los Angeles. Was the person I met first, if I were to trace it back to its origins. And I assisted him on a film that came to Malta.
All right, okay.
So I worked with him for a number of months. I actually followed the film in its post phase in Los Angeles. Understood and found that I had an aptitude to dealing with this discipline within filmmaking. It doesn't take very much to fall in love with the industry. I mean, if you love film, if you love television, it's actually like a dream come true. So I worked in the studio in Los Angeles for 6 or 8 weeks, I think it was. It was back in 2002, so it's quite some time ago. But it was amazing to see the artists work on stuff during the day and see them on air the following week. And we were working on some very interesting shows, mostly television, but there were about 10 to 15 shows happening in the studio. And on one desk there was CSI, and on the other desk there was ER, and on the other desk there was Desperate Housewives, and there were shows. It was like a kid in a candy store. I felt so lucky to see how all this stuff was being put together. Visited a couple of sets, made the experience, and then came back to Malta because the ride was over. That was the show wrap. Ride was over, and inherently you try to mimic what you've seen abroad in your day-to-day job, which was very very local. And together with my local business partner today, David Sedge, we did a lot of local commercials.
Okay.
But every time we had the opportunity to add something in visual effects to one of our commercials, that gave us the competitive edge and made it look bigger, better.
And good for your portfolios as well, no?
It's all about the portfolio. Everything you add to the portfolio helps you get the next job. And so we continued building a portfolio, and I continued to nurture the relationship with Sam in the States until the first opportunity came around to do a European television series in Spain.
Okay.
So at that point in time, we got a request, and it made sense that this would not go to America, but the question was, guys, can you make it happen in Malta? So, you know, game on. We budgeted, we hired, we recruited, we built machines and storage and everything, and we supervised the show. David, my business partner, actually spent over a year in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, probably close to two, because it went on for a number of seasons.
Okay.
We learned a lot. We learned a lot. We put the show together. We delivered three seasons. It's actually more like four, but... And we were groundbreaking with the challenges that we took on in relation to what was normally expected out of a regular Spanish television show. So we gave it an exotic look. We transported locations. We put them in Morocco. It was very exciting.
Mm.
Had huge ratings, and from that point on, we were on the map.
Uh-huh.
And then it's word of mouth. Like other industries, it's word of mouth.
Is there like a directory of providers almost that people would know? Go to these guys for.
It's the producers that speak to each other. You know, and they go, "I have this really difficult challenge. We have to do this, and I know somebody who can help you with that." And we went from Spain to Brussels, and from Brussels to Rome, and from Rome to London, and one job would, because it's an international.
And I guess
crew.
Lots of the crew are all they don't work on the same thing every time, and
they travel and speak, and we got job after job after job, and we had to grow, so we went from 5 to 15 to 20, and I think at this point we're at about 35.
And this is all. Generally, people who are sort of
at this point,
designers and
it takes a bit of everything. We have managers and accounts and
the boring
stuff. Technicians. My job in particular has become managing this, you know, managing the studio. Whilst David, my business partner, takes care of the actual work itself.
Okay, the creative-y sort of, all the business.
It's a technical and creative, you know. So we divide and conquer, but we've had to hire more people to assist us in the process. And on a daily basis, we open the internet line. Actually, we never shut it, but you know, we look at the hard drives, and they've dropped more material in there for us to work on.
Okay.
Or we receive requests to break down scripts. And, I mean, right now we're breaking down something in Canada that's shooting in China. So, you know, it's got us off our backside, and we have had to travel. I mean, last week we had people in Israel, in Rome, and I was in Brussels, and we were spread all over the place doing closing deals and putting them all together. So the local market is something we still service to a lesser extent. I mean, not necessarily less, but in comparison to everything else that's going on, it's a smaller piece of the pie. And we still do our own local productions.
Okay.
But we also are very caught up with making everything else happen wherever they call us.
So I'm guessing the film industry in general, is it kind of English-based, a bit Americanized, a bit, or is it you're dealing with a Spanish company? It's a Spanish company. You're dealing with this Canadian. Canadians are different to Americans, you know. Is it? How does that work in terms of cultural fits?
So, I think we are, as Maltese, we're multifaceted. Like I explained, we took on the American way, modus operandi.
Mm-hmm.
We owned it, and we actually changed it a little, because that's what you do. You make it your own. And we answered requests that came from wherever. Say it's the Italians that are asking for a show. So you kind of have to speak their language, mm-hmm. both metaphorically and literally, mm-hmm. and you have to meet their expectations. But they know that we are coming from a world they don't live in, mm-hmm. because we have an American business card and we have a Maltese stroke Anglo-Saxon way of working. So it's a dance where you have to fit in with them, but also take the opportunity because you're bringing something new to the table. So we worked with the Italians like that. We worked with, I mean, we lived in Spain practically for 2 years in one form or another. Had to learn how to speak the language, understood the television, the directors, the stations, the most popular scriptwriters.
And even like what the Spanish people, if it was aimed at a Spanish market, you know, what they mm-hmm. like. And so even lighting, even furnishings, even, you know, all of that stuff is really precise, isn't it? It's not, you know,
you
think everything's globalized, but it's
you get
not
to learn actually. And you adapt yourselves. Mm-hmm. But I think we're really good at adapting ourselves.
Maltese, definitely,
yes.
Yeah.
So that's a plus. So we can speak to the Americans like uh-huh. we understand their culture, and we can speak to the Italians like we understand their culture, because we in fact do.
Do now, uh-huh. So, yeah. And what's the most difficult part of the job? Is it the hiring of people, you know, finding talent locally, or do you actually import your talent as well? Or is it the constant juggling of how many projects are there and, you know, putting the right people on the right job at the right time? That sort of
these are all challenges. I would think the most difficult part of the job, in essence, is keeping us busy 24/7, because the film industry is built out of jobs that have a beginning and an end, mm-hmm. and then typically people take a break. So if I were a director of photography and I worked on a television show, uh-huh. I would kill myself for 9 months in the year and then possibly take 3 or 6 months off till I'm looking for the next job, unless I'm really in high demand and have it waiting for me, which happens. Actors hang around mm-hmm. waiting for the next job. We can't afford to have our artists hanging around waiting for the next job. So finding the next job, getting it confirmed and putting it back to back with the last one is one of my toughest challenges. I lose sleep over having people doing nothing.
At least you can, you know, special effects your face so that you don't look tired.
Yep, you can.
So that's a big thing then, sort of keeping
everybody busy and then understanding who you need to do what job, mm-hmm. seeing if you have the expertise. For example, one of the areas we're growing in is character animation. So we get the request to have a monster or you need the very particular skilled people mm-hmm. to do that kind of job. So hiring those people, finding mm-hmm. them, bringing them to Malta, because we don't have enough talent on
locally,
the road.
Uh-huh.
Yep. This is
no, in most jobs, let alone in your industry.
Completely. Figuring out that whilst they're here, other people are learning, mm-hmm. training, budgeting, challenging clients to get budgets that address their needs, which uh-huh. they don't understand. So it's a full-on business. I mean,
that must be great, though, to have, you know, on your CV, monster creator. That's got to be the best job in the world, you know. Forget airline pilot, you know, it's like monster creator. Oh?
It is fun.
Pretty awesome.
There is an adrenaline rush that comes along with like receiving a request like that.
And you see these scripts. So the script you're working on now, is that like really exciting? I know you can't talk about it, but
This one is a little scary, to be honest with you, because sometimes you have either like social issues or political issues, or I would say you may be telling some very awkward stories that need to know if you want to work on the show, can work on the show, uh-huh. should work on the show. Sometimes there are moral issues that you're telling stories that you may not
agree with.
So it's storytelling. It's up and down. So there's a huge amount of excitement, and there's some apprehension that goes along with it. Yes,
because knowing that the next guy may not pick you up because of the work that was done on the last movie or whatever.
And making sure you do a great job every time, because, you know, everybody tells you good job, but mm-hmm. when it's not a good job and there are multiple reasons why something mm-hmm. may not turn out as you wished for it, then that's a bad black mark, which is what we try to avoid, like the plague.
But lots of work lined up for the future, so lots of Stargate involvement around the world?
We have visibility for, generally speaking, next 4 or 5 months out.
Okay.
We can't see much further out. They're speculative.
But that film industry is a bit like that in the TV industry, because things get cut once, you know, even after they've been approved, they decide not to,
what
or the
you
pilot
pray,
doesn't work. Or,
yeah, what you pray to have is a show that you're comfortable with that goes on for 9 seasons, which means that you have 9 years
worth of work.
But you never know. You never know how many seasons or if they're going to change you as a vendor.
Do you know what I think would be a really good idea? This might have been done. You know, to get a really old film and put modern things in it. So instead of a horse and cart, they have a Ferrari, or they have, you know, a Tesla, and then they have mobile phones instead of, you know, that might be quite funny to see, like, Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire and doing, you know, with modern life tech, sort of changing it the other way around.
Right, so instead of doing, pitch it.
Yeah, okay, let's do it. Let's do it. So if I wanted to apply for a job, in all seriousness, what's the sort of things I would need? What's the qualities you look for in a member of staff for Stargate Studios?
So it's funny to say this after university radio, but it's not an academic job.
Yay!
I don't look at any CVs.
Okay.
They're nice when, qualifications in the CVs. They're nice when they're there.
Mm-hmm.
They show that people have put time and effort into learning the craft, but it does not necessarily mean you know how to do it well.
Okay.
Or with passion, or with artistry, or with technical knowledge. So generally speaking, we try to pick up people that have a reel.
Okay, it's like a showreel type
thing, huh? Which means if you're a musician, show me what you can do. You know, if you're an artist, show me what you can do. And people that have a love for the industry generally have done a lot of their own finding out and trying out and messing around at home. And we build on that. So I don't think it's about qualifications. I would certainly say that we're a very different type of profile. But really it's your passion that pushes you through, and we pick up on that.
So to those kids that are scribbling and animating and,
most
you know,
definitely.
Singing to themselves, whatever, they're the kind of people you're looking for. You don't need O-levels. You don't need a university degree. I would have been perfect for you as a kid. Absolutely perfect. So you are have been listening to Monique Chambers interviewing Matthew Bellacino of Stargate Studios. Watch out for my, you know, CV and my reel.
You do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, produced by me, Monique Chambers, with technical assistance from Carmelo Grek and Redent Abdillah. This show is aired every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. and repeated on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. here on Campus FM.